By firelight they ate smoked lake fish and durra cakes. Then in the dawn they set off along the lake shore. Within half a league they came to a dry white riverbed. "What river was this?" Taita asked Kalulu, although he knew what the answer would be. "This was and is the Nile," Kalulu replied simply. "It is completely dried up," Taita exclaimed, as he looked across the riverbed. It was 400 paces from bank to bank, but no water flowed between them. Instead, elephant grass, like miniature bamboo that stood twice the height of a tall man, had filled it. "We have followed the river 2,000 leagues from Egypt to this place. All the way we have found at least some water, standing pools, even trickles and rivulets. But here it is as dry as the desert." "The water you encountered further north was the overflow from the lake Semliki Nyanzu, which ran in from its tributaries," Kalula explained. "This was the Nile, the mightiest river on all the earth. Now it is nothing." "What has happened to it?" Taita demanded. "What infernal power could have stopped such a vast flow?" "It is something that defies even an imagination, as all-encompassing as your own, Magus. When we reach the Red Stones, you will see it all before you." Fenn had been translating what was said for the benefit of Merrin, and now he could no longer contain himself. "If we are to follow a dry river," he demanded, "where will I find water for my men and horses?" "You will find it even as the elephants do, by digging for it," Taita told him. "How long will this journey take?" Merrin asked. When this had been translated, Kalulu gave him an impish smile and replied, "Much depends on the stamina of your horses and the strength of your own legs." They moved fast, passing the stagnant pools of once brimming lagoons and climbing through dry, rocky gorges where waterfalls had thundered. 16 days later they came upon a low ridge that ran parallel to the course of the Nile. It was the first feature that had relieved the monotony of the forest for many leagues. "On that high ground stands the town of Tamafupa, the home of my people," Kalulu told them. "From the heights you can see the great waters of Nalubale." "Let us go there," Taita said. They rode up through a grove of fever trees with bright yellow trunks, which covered the slope above the dry riverbed. For lack of water, the trees had died back, and their branches were leafless and twisted like rheumatic limbs. They came out on top of the ridge, where wind smoke flared her nostrils and tossed her head. Whirlwind was equally excited. He gave a series of bucks and jumps. "You bad horse!" Fenn struck him lightly on the neck with the switch of papyrus she carried. "Behave!" Then she called to Taita. "What is exciting them, Magus?" "Smell it for yourself," he called. "Cool and sweet as the perfume of Kigelia flowers." "I smell it now," she said, "but what is it?" "Water," he answered, and pointed ahead. To the south stood a silver cloud, and beneath it lay a curve of ethereal blue that stretched across the breadth of the horizon. "Nalubale, at last!" A sturdy palisade of hardwood poles dominated the crest of the ridge. The gates stood open, and they rode through into the abandoned village of Tamafupa. Evidently, it had once been the centre of a prosperous, thriving community. The abandoned huts were palatial and magnificently thatched, but the brooding silence that hung over them was eerie. They turned back to the gates and called up the rest of the party. In response to their halloo, Kalulu was borne up to them on his litter by the panting and perspiring bodyguards. They were all solemn and contemplative as they gathered before the gates of Tamafupa and stared at the distant blue waters. Taita broke the silence. "The source of our very Mother Nile." "The end of the earth," Kalulu said. "There is nothing beyond those waters but the void and the lie." Taita looked back at the fortifications of Tamafupa. "We are in dangerous country, surrounded by hostile tribes. We will use it as our stronghold until we move on," he told Merrin. "We will leave Hilto and Shabako here with their men to make the walls secure against attack. While they attend to this, Kalulu will take us to see the mysterious red stones." In the morning they went on. the last short stage of the journey that had taken them more than 2 years to complete. They followed the riverbed, often riding in the middle of the wide, dry dip. They came round another gentle bend, and ahead of them sloped a glacis of water-worn rocks. Surmounting it, like the fortification of a great city, rose a wall of solid red granite. "In the holy names of Horus the Sun and Osiris the Divine Father," Merrin exclaimed, "what fortress is this? Is it the citadel of some African emperor?" "What you see are the red stones," said Kululu quietly. "Who placed them there?" Taita asked, as perplexed as any of his companions. "What man or demon has done this?" "No man," Kululu replied. "This is not the work of human hands."
"What, then?"
"Come, let me show it to you first. Then we can discuss it." Cautiously they approached the red stones. When at last they stood under the great wall of rock that blocked the course of the Nile from one bank to the other, Taita dismounted and walked slowly along the base. Fenn and Merrin followed him. They paused at intervals to inspect. It was flow-shaped, like the wax of a candle.
"The rock was once molten," Taita observed. "It has cooled into these fantastic shapes."
"You are correct," Kululu agreed. "That is precisely how it was formed."
"It seems impossible, but this is a single mass of solid stone. There are no joints between the individual blocks."
"There is at least one crack, Magus," Fenn pointed ahead. Her keen eye had spotted a narrow fissure that ran through the centre of the wall from top to bottom.
When they reached it, Taita drew his dagger and tried to work the blade into it, but it was too narrow. The blade went in only as deep as the first joint of his little finger.
"That is why my people call it the Red Stones, rather than the Red Stone," Kalula told them, "for it is divided into two sections."
Taita went down on one knee to examine the base of the wall.
"It is not built upon the old riverbed. It emerges from it as though it has grown up from the centre of the earth like some monstrous mushroom. The stone of this wall seems to differ from any other around it."
"Again, you are right," Kalula told him.
"It cannot be chiselled or chipped like the rock that surrounds it. If you look closely, you will see the red crystals in it that give it the name."
Taita leant forward until the minute crystals of which the wall was composed caught the sunlight and sparkled like tiny rubies. "There is nothing obscene or unnatural about it," he said softly. He came back to where Kululu sat on his litter. "How did this thing come to be here?"
"I cannot say with any certainty, Magus, even though I was here when it happened."
"If you witnessed it, how do you not know what happened?"
"I will explain it to you later," said Kululu. "Suffice to say that many others witnessed it, as I did, yet they have 50 different legends to describe it."
"This entire wall of stone is chimerical," Taita pointed out. "Perhaps seeds of the truth may be buried in the legends and fantasies."
"That may be so," Kalula inclined his head in agreement. "But let us first ascend to the summit of the wall. There is much still that you must see." They had to retreat along the riverbed to find a place to climb out and to the top of the bank. Then they picked their way back to the base of the red stone wall. "I will wait for you here," Kalula said. "The way up is too difficult." He indicated the daunting climb over glassy and almost vertical rock to the summit. They left him and cautiously climbed upwards. In some places they were forced to crawl on hands and knees, but at last they stood on the rounded top of the red stones. From there they looked out across the lake. Taita shaded his eyes against the sun dazzle that danced on the surface of the water. Close by there were a number of small islets, but he could see not the faintest trace of land beyond them. He looked back the way they had come. The foreshortened figure of the dwarf was far below. Kalula was gazing up at him.
"Has anyone ever tried to cross to the far side of the lake?" Taita called down.
"There is no far side," Kalula shouted back. "There is only the void."
The surface of the water lapped the wall only 4 or 5 cubits below their feet. Taita looked back into the riverbed and made an approximate calculation of the discrepancy in the heights on each side of the wall.
It is holding back 40 or 50 cubits depth of water. He made a sweeping gesture, which took in the limitless extent of the lake's surface. Without this wall, all that water would have spilled over the cataract into the Nile and been carried down into Egypt. Little wonder that our land has been reduced to such straits. We could sweep through the surrounding country, capture a host of slaves, and set them to work on it, Meron suggested. What would they do? Taita asked. We will tear down this barrier, and let the Nile waters flow into our very Egypt once more. Taita smiled and stamped one sandaled foot on the wall beneath him. Kalulu has told us how hard and adamantine the stone is. Look at the size of it, Meron. It is many times bigger than all three of the great pyramids of Giza placed on top of each other. If you captured every man in Africa and set them to work for the next 100 years, I doubt they could move even a small part of it. We should not take that strange man's word for how hard it is. I will get my men to test the rock with fire and bronze. Remember also, Magus, the engineering skills that raised those pyramids might be used to cast them down again. I see no reason why we should not be able to carry out the same feat, for we are also Egyptians, the most advanced culture on this earth. I see some small merit in your arguments, Meron, Taita agreed. Then something beyond the far end of the wall caught his attention. He frowned. Is that a building on the bluff overlooking us? I will put the question to Kalulu. They scrambled down the slippery rock face to where the dwarf sat on his litter surrounded by his bodyguards. When Taita pointed out the ruins, he nodded brightly. You are right, Magus. That is a temple built by men. Your tribe do not build in stone, do they? No, that place was built by strangers. Who were those strangers, and when did they build it? Taita demanded. It is almost exactly 15 years ago that they laid the first stones. What manner of men were they? Taita asked. Kalulu hesitated before he answered. They were not southern men. Their features were like yours and those men with you. They wore the same dress and carried the same weapons. Taita stared at him, stunned into silence. At last he said, You suggest that they were Egyptians? It does not seem possible. Are you sure they came from Egypt? I know nothing about the land from which you have come. I have never been down the Nile, even as far as the great swamps. I cannot say with any certainty, but to me they appeared to be men of your race. Did you speak to them? No, Kalula said with feeling. They were secretive and spoke to no one. How many were here, and where are they now? Taita asked keenly. He seemed to be watching the little man's eyes intently, but Fenn knew he was reading his aura. There were more than 30 and less than 50. They disappeared as mysteriously as they came. They disappeared after the damming of the river with the red stones. At the same time, Magus. Surpassing strange, Taita said. Who inhabits the temple now? It is deserted, Magus, Kalula replied. As all the land for 100 leagues around is deserted, my tribe and all the others fled in terror at these and other strange events. Even I took shelter in the marshes. This is the first time I have returned, and I admit that I would never have done so without your protection. We should visit the temple, Taita said. Will you show it to us? I have never been inside that building, Kalula said softly. I never will. You must not ask me to go with you. Why not, Kalulu? It is the site of utmost evil, the force that has brought disaster upon all of us. I respect your caution. These are deep matters and should not be undertaken lightly. Return with Meron. I will go alone to the temple. He turned to Meron. Spare no labours to make the camp secure. Fortify it well and post a strong guard. When you have done that, we will return to assay the hardness of the red stones. I implore you to return to the camp before darkness falls, Magus. Meron looked jaundiced with worry. If you are not back at sunset, I will come to search for you. As the bodyguards hefted the litter and followed Meron, Taita turned to Fenn. Go with Meron. Hurry to catch up with him. She stood to her full height, arms behind her back, mouth set obstinately. He had come to know that expression well. There is no spell you can weave to make me leave you, she declared. When you scowl, you are no longer beautiful, he warned her mildly. "You cannot imagine how ugly I can be," she said. "Try to rid yourself of me, and I will show you." "Your threats unman me," he could scarce prevent himself smiling. "But stay close to me, and be ready to form the circle at the first malevolent emanation we encounter." They found a path that climbed the bluff. When they reached the temple, they saw that the stonework was beautifully executed. The entire building was roofed with hewn timber planking, over which had been laid a thatch of river reeds that was collapsing in places. They walked slowly round the walls. The temple was laid out on a circular foundation about 50 paces across. At 5 equidistant points, tall granite stele had been built into the walls. "The 5 points of the Black Magician's pentagram," Taita told Fenn softly. They came back to the entrance portals of the temple. The door jambs were carved with bas-reliefs of esoteric symbols. "Can you read them?" Fenn asked. "No," Taita admitted. "They are alien." Then he looked into her eyes for any sign of fear. "Will you enter with me?" For answer she took his hand. "Let us form the circle," she suggested. Together they stepped through the gateway into the circular outer portico. It was paved with flat grey stones, and shafts of light beamed down through the holes in the roof. There was no opening in the inner wall. Side by side they followed the curving portico. As they drew level with each stela, they found the points of the pentagram laid out in white marble under their feet. Within each point was enclosed another mysterious symbol, a serpent, a crux ansata, a vulture in flight, another at roost, and last, a jackal. They stepped over a pile of loose thatching and heard a harsh hiss, then a violent rustle beneath their feet. Taita slipped an arm round Fenn's waist and lifted her clear. Behind them, the hooded head of a black Egyptian cobra rose out of the tumbled reeds. It stared hard at them with tiny black marble eyes, the long tongue flickering and testing the air for their scent. Taita set Fenn down, raised his staff, and pointed it at the serpent's head. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "This is no apparition. It is a natural animal." He began to move the tip of the staff rhythmically from side to side, and the cobra swayed to the motion. Gradually it was lulled, the hood deflated, and it sank back into the tangle of thatch. Taita led Fenn away down the gallery. They stopped at last in front of an ornate doorway. "The opposed opening," Taita told her. "This is diametrically opposite the outer entrance. It limits the ingress and egress of alien influences to the inner sanctum." The doorway that faced them was shaped like a petaled flower. The jambs were covered with tiles of polished ivory, malachite, and tiger's eye. The closed doors were covered with lacquered crocodile skin. Taita used his staff to lean his full weight against one door. It swung open, bronze hinges whining. The interior was lit only by a shaft of sunlight cast from a single opening in the dome of the roof. It struck the floor of the sanctum in an eruption of colour. The floor was decorated with an elaborately designed pentagram. The pattern worked in tiles of marble and semi-precious stones. Taita recognised rose quartz and rock crystal, beryllium and rubylite. The workmanship was masterly. The heart of the design was a circle of tiles so superbly fitted together and polished that the joints were invisible. It seemed to be a single shield of gleaming ivory. "Let us go in, Magus," Fenn's childish treble was thrown back and forth between the rounded walls. "Wait," he said. "There is a presence within, the spirit of this place. I think it is dangerous. It is what terrified Kalulu." He pointed to the sunlight on the temple floor. "It is almost noon. The beam is about to fall upon the heart of the pentagram. That will be the fateful moment." They watched the sunlight creep across the floor. It touched the lip of the ivory circle and was reflected onto the surrounding walls, its radiance enhanced tenfold. Now it seemed to advance more swiftly until suddenly it filled the ivory disk. Immediately they heard Sistrum's hum and rattle. They heard the wings of bats and vultures in the air around them. White light filled the sanctum with such brilliance that they lifted their hands to shield their eyes. Through the dazzle, they saw the spirit sign of Eos appear at the centre of the disc, the cat's paw picked out in fire. The odour of the witch filled their nostrils with the redolence of wild beasts. They reeled back from the doorway, but then the sunlight passed over the ivory disc and the fiery letters were expunged. The reek of the witch abated, leaving only the smell of musty thatch and bat droppings. The sunlight faded, leaving the sanctum once more in gloom. In silence they retreated down the gallery and out into the sunlight. "She was there," whispered Fen. She took a deep breath of the cool lake air, as if to cleanse her lungs. "Her influence remains," Taita pointed with his staff at the humped red stones. "She still presides over her fiendish works." "Could we destroy her temple?" Fen glanced back at the building. "And in that way destroy her also?" "No," Taita told her firmly. "Her influence is powerful within the inner sanctum of her stronghold. To challenge her there would be mortally dangerous. We will find another time and place to attack her." He took Fen's hand and led her away. "We will return tomorrow to test the wall for weakness and to learn more from Kalulu of how the red stones were placed across the gorge."